Falcon Cast Podcast, the ultimate podcast for the ultimate fan. Now, here's AtlantaFalcons.com's own Jay Adams and Daniel Cox.
Falcons fans, welcome back to the Falcon Cast Podcast, the first one of 2014.
Yes.
Can you believe it?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. We took a couple of weeks off, had the holidays, and then a little time off at the end of the season, which I think was well needed by both of us.
Yeah, nothing was really happening, so. Team. So.
Yeah, and unfortunately. I know you and I are used to preparing for extra games, but it was an early winter break for us, and so we took it. So it's been a couple of weeks since we've been here on the podcast.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, because I, you know, you always wonder how long it takes guys to kind of get over a season and move and get ready for the new one, and it'll be interesting to see what some of you guys have to say about that when they come back here, you know, later this year, I guess later in the spring.
Now. Yes.
For me, though, I was wondering, like, how do you feel, like, right now? Like, you know, the Falcon season's over. You know, while the NFL season is still kind of going on, heading into divisional rounds, or I believe whatever it is this weekend. Is the season behind you? Have you kind of put it to bed and moved on?
You know, I have, and the reason, you know, I don't approach things any differently. Regardless, because as you well know, we've got to turn things around as the season turns. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, it's been about, since, you know, the day the season ended, looking ahead and not looking back.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we're going to spend a little time here looking back. But I think it's just one of those things where, you know what, it's done. And this was even last year when we had the great 13-3 season, NFC Championship game appearance.
Yeah,
there was a lot to celebrate, you know, despite not making your ultimate goal. But it was time to move on, because when you finish up towards the end of January, there's very little time before you get into the I mean, the Senior Bowl was, I think, the following week. After the NFC Championship game, and then you're getting ready for the combine and all, so you're revved up and ready to go. Yeah. Now you've got about 3 weeks, but still, I'm focused on studying up on some of these Senior Bowl guys, and especially now that, you know, the Falcons coaching staff is there as well. What happened to our crew here?
They're on vacation, Jay.
Man, sorry, Julio. Julio's by himself.
Sticking around, he's
off season, Julio. everybody else is gone for break. So yeah, for me, it's everything's behind me, and I'm just focused on next year. But of course, I'm approaching any sort of looking back with some kind of tie into how it will affect the next season. So for me, it is. For me, it's behind me.
Yeah, absolutely. I took me a couple of days. I don't, and it's kind of interesting. Like Arthur Blank, team owner. That we love dearly. Earlier this week, when he gave his press conference, he said he started to get that sense that the season was heading in a place that was a little different than what it had been like in the past couple of seasons, much, much earlier this year than in recent seasons. I think, you know, that kind of helped be able to kind of just sweep it away real quickly, too. It's not, you know, the disappointment of expectations, you know, before we began the season. You kind of started to see that, and you kind of dealt with that weeks ago. So once the season was – week 17 closed, and we celebrated Tony and everything, it was, you know, a day or two later, I'm done. Let's move on.
And the year-end press conferences with Arthur Blank, with Mike Smith and Thomas Dimitroff, put a tie on, on kind of everything. And a lot of questions that you have end up being answered, you know, in those couple of weeks. It was about 2 weeks, so period of 2 weeks. And so you know, that brings a lot of closure. You wonder about what's going on with the coaching staff, what's going on with the personnel staff, those kinds of things, and those questions get answered, and you just kind of move on. So for me, you know, it's full steam ahead.
Absolutely.
But we will look back on the most valuable Falcon competition between you and me.
Couldn't quite get that one past you.
No we're not gonna get past it. Okay, so to recap,
right
all right, Daniel and I, throughout the season, spent a little bit of time each week discussing who we thought our most valuable Falcon would be for each game.
Right.
And we kept track.
Yeah, the player that we felt would have the greatest impact on the game.
Yes. So it was a tight race towards the end.
Yeah.
Because I was up three games with three games to go.
Right.
And you had to run the table. Mm-hmm. And if you ran the table, we were going to have a tie, which I think we were going to make into some kind of – the tiebreaker was going to be like a dance-off between our interns or something like that, with one of us being represented by one of the interns.
Yes.
So unfortunately, that's not going to happen for you.
Right.
For me, it's fortunate because I win.
Right, right. Which is rare around these parts, Jay.
You are right about that. No. So we were 7-6-2 heading into Week 16.
Right.
I chose Roddy White. The Week 16 matchup at San Francisco, I chose Roddy White. You chose Tony Gonzalez. A fantastic pick. Had a great game despite the loss. He had 8 catches, 63 yards, 1 touchdown. Yeah. Roddy, however, had his usual San Francisco performance and had 12 catches, 141, and a touchdown. So
it's rare that a guy will get a touchdown, like when we were picking offensive players in this particular game, the guy will get a touchdown and not, you know, be the winner.
Yeah. So, you know, I just want you to know that I'm not going to, you know, this success isn't going to change me.
Right.
I'm still the same guy.
Okay.
Well,
failure is going to only make me, you know, want to come back with a vengeance and come back here next season.
Yeah.
And make some great picks.
You can only improve from here.
Right, right.
So if you were wondering at home, that's how things ended up. I think, you know, 24-hour rule.
Yeah.
You celebrate.
Absolutely.
You move on.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll see what happens.
I'm sure we'll hear about it again.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, a little bragging rights. A little bragging rights.
Okay. I don't blame you. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Well deserved.
All right. So speaking of some things about 2013. I know there are a lot of people who don't see the silver lining in some of these scenarios.
Yeah.
You know, you look at record 4-12, obviously a disappointing season for a lot of fans. And for all of us as well. You know, we all expected that 2013 would go a little better than it did.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you and I feel like there's reasons to be optimistic for 2014.
For sure.
And several of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're not silver linings. You know, they're legitimate things.
Absolutely. So what Daniel and I did is we compiled some reasons, three reasons each, that just are reasons why we're optimistic for 2014.
I
don't think it needs much more of an introduction than that.
Yeah.
So we'll go back and forth here, but why don't you lead it off? Sure. Number one reason why you're optimistic about 2014.
It's because this guy right here. This guy.
Lonely Julio.
Yeah, he is lonely, but he's working hard, I'm sure. But, you know, the Falcons offense can welcome back Julio Jones, and, you know, and the rest of the league will shudder in fear. But, listen, he played weeks 1-5 last season, right?
Yeah.
41 catches, 580 yards.
Yeah.
And he only had 2 touchdowns. And let's be honest, you know, the Falcons offense struggled in the first part of that in the first part of the season. But Julio was still making plays. So if there's a more exciting guy with the football in his hands in the league, you know, you can make some cases for a number of guys, but I'm always going to make the case for Julio. I can't wait to see him come back and what he's going to do in this offense.
Yeah, and what was really astounding to me was I looked at receiver stats in like week 8 or week 9, and he was still top 5.
Yeah.
Like that was he played 4 games and 4 games later.
Yeah.
With him being sidelined and on IR, he was still near the top of the league in major receiving statistics. Right. So, that shows you the impact, I think, that Julio can have.
And it's so disappointing because he was on pace for such a monster year.
Sure.
He was on pace for one of those Calvin Johnson, 2012, or one of those seasons, those 2,000-yard seasons.
Yeah.
Those are historic seasons, and he was he was on pace for something like that. And it's disappointing for him to see him not get to have that opportunity. But hey, I'm really excited about him coming back.
And the really encouraging thing with him is that he's kind of gone through this before.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy, unfortunately, he's been banged up throughout his career, but specifically with the foot injury, you know, this is something he's gone through before. He kind of knows what to expect. We can kind of tell what to expect when he returns, and that's probably not too much a departure from where he left off. Yeah. So for me, just to add to your point, it's encouraging to know that a guy like Julio is going to be back. But I think he can continue that progression without a whole lot of drop-off because of the injury.
Absolutely.
So, all right. I'm not going to call this a number one reason.
Right.
But the first thing that came to my head, and this should be no surprise considering the man crush, yes, of sorts that
he's your MVF.
He's my MVF, exactly. I won many times with... Yeah. With this guy, Paul Warlow. Yeah.
What's his name again?
Paul Warlow, not yes. Peter Whirly Woo, yeah. or any other variation.
Paul.
Patrick Wizzledorf. It is Paul Warlow. Although if you head on over to Twitter, I'm sure we can get some other combinations out there. Anyways, you got to be really encouraged by what you see from this kid. And I think it's going to be important in 2014 for him to prove that, look, that wasn't a fluke.
Yeah.
You know, I am able to get around the ball. I am able to make tackles when I need to. I think that's going to be an important year or an important step in his career is that avoiding that sophomore slump,
right,
so to speak. But he played in, I think, 12 games that he started and ended up leading the team in tackles with, I think, 127. And
yeah.
I probably should have looked that up before I came. But, I mean, it's astounding what an undrafted rookie linebacker did in his first year, basically thrown into the fire. Mm-hmm. You know, you knew with Desmond Trufant that he was going to be thrown into fire as a first-round
pick.
And you kind of expect that. As a first-rounder, you expect to get an impact from your guys mm-hmm. right away. An undrafted guy, you're just trying to make a roster. You're you're happy making a practice squad.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
You know, looking back through photos and stuff, of course, the season, and I love to go back to the training camp photos of Paul Warlow, and we're like, you know, he changed his number a couple of times. He was just, he wasn't just a guy. You don't want to think about the players on the field quite like that, but he was just a name. It was like one of the you know, maybe going to compete for a practice squad or something like that. And,
well, honestly, I mean, when we were going through training camp, the first time I really noticed him as something more than just a name on the roster was Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
He came out and had a lights-out performance. If it was live play, I think he would have ended the day with three sacks. And that was against the first-team offense.
Right.
Like, he was getting first-team defense snaps during that time. Well, first-team for, you know, considering who was out there. Because, you know, a lot of these guys don't get that kind of playing time during Friday Night Lights. But he was getting some good snaps. He was getting great pressure. And if it was live play against a quarterback, I know that he probably would have escaped with probably about two and a half sacks in that performance. And you and I kind of looked at each other like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because there were a couple other linebackers that we had been told about that we were like, okay, maybe keep an eye on this guy. And that was where our focus was.
Yeah.
And then Warlow comes out of nowhere, basically, for us.
Yeah.
Anyways. And ends up kind of starting that upward trajectory. And it only carried on when he put up, I think, 11 tackles in his first preseason game and two quarters of work.
Yeah.
So, really, that where he started from and where he ended, I think, is so encouraging for 2014.
Yeah.
Because you really look at him as, okay, that's your defensive rock right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he could be great for a long time to come. And I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah.
I think you get a full season, a full off season of weight room training, those kinds of things with him. I think he can only get better.
Yeah, you know, if his baseline is what he did last season as a middle linebacker, just kind of being the glue, so to speak. Yeah, hey, that's a great I was like, we'll take that.
Yeah. And it's still astounding to me, and I've said this a couple of times on Twitter, the Falcons were the only team to offer him a contract after the draft.
I know.
The only team. So that's a huge win for your scouting staff. Yeah. That's a huge win for your personnel department. Because when you talk about bang for your buck, I mean, that's awesome to get that kind of production out of an undrafted rookie. So positives all around for this guy. And certainly there are areas where he can improve, and I think he'll spend that time in the offseason doing that. But totally encouraging heading into 2014 as far as Paul Warlow goes.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and my second selection for what I'm most encouraged about, you know, heading into the next season, you know, the rookie conversation starts with Paul Warlow, but there's a handful of guys that have played throughout this whole year. You know, Jacques-Louis Bartou was his running mate at linebacker. He's another one of those guys that kind of emerged, you know, from obscurity, so to speak, during training camp. All those rookies got so much time on the field last season, and, you know, we heard Arthur Blank say something on Monday about the Falcons having the highest – The most number of rookies or snaps of rookies that played last season in the NFL. I took a look around, and he was right. 4,708 snaps, number one in the league, like 400 more than the second-place team, which is the Patriots.
Yeah.
That's a lot of snaps for rookies,
yeah.
And those are meaningful snaps. And as I was looking through, you start to see like how other teams were using rookies in some of their first round picks, and you don't know. You know, on the surface, you don't always know the situations why, but you know, rookies are getting 200-300 snaps. Meanwhile, Paul Warlow and Trufant and these guys are getting 1,900 snaps, 800 snaps. That's so much time on the field.
Yeah,
that's a lot of learning on the job.
Yes.
What do you say? Right,
learning
you know,
on the job. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, the first year in your job, you're not always as great as you might be in your second year. When once you kind of get comfortable, you start to. You feel like you belong, and you start to understand what your employer wants you to accomplish and these things. And I just feel like that's nothing but positive, you know, moving ahead. And, you know, some of these guys might not be starters next season, you know, but they got so much valuable experience this year that they're if nothing else, your depth is going to be so much stronger.
And I think that's a good point to bring up is that I think if anything, the 2013 season underscored the importance of depth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you had that depth from a rookie standpoint. You had some solid rookies who were able to come in and contribute. And I think any other group of players may not have had the production that some of these guys did. So that was good. But at the same time, you were still looking for that depth that was going to provide you with very little drop-off from your starters. And I think now that you've got that year of experience, even if, like you said, there are a couple of these guys that don't start next year,
Yeah. You
know you've got solid depth and solid experience behind these guys, because a couple of these rookies are going to have playing experience beyond their years,
mm-hmm.
what you would expect, you know, a rookie to have,
right.
or a second-year player to have. They've got that snap count now, yeah. that maybe a third or maybe fourth-year player has.
Mm-hmm.
So that experience ends up being so valuable when you talk about depth, and injuries are something you can't prevent. You do your do the best you can, but you try to prepare for the worst. And
yeah.
I think in those terms, getting these guys some of that valuable experience is huge.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and it's just when they're sitting in these meetings, you know, through the off season and everything, there's going to be so much that they've already seen. You know, that exposure is significant.
Yeah. Speaking of experience, Matt Ryan's experience in 2013 was one of the more encouraging things that I saw out of the year, and I'll tell you why. And I know that's an interesting way to phrase it.
He got sacked a lot.
He got sacked a lot, 44 times, more times than any point in his NFL career.
Mm-hmm.
The way he played under those conditions is the most encouraging thing for me heading into 2014. We heard from Arthur Blank the other day, and he said in varied terms that we are going to focus on the interior. We are mm-hmm. not going to focus on skill position players. We're going to focus on the interior. And I think that getting Matt Ryan time is the key to the Falcons.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's what makes this team go.
Yeah, it's the key to getting Julio Jones down the field.
Exactly. You can have all the weapons in the world, but if you've got Matt on his back, not going to do anything for you. And I think that that's the what the team is coming to right now and heading into the offseason. So I think that those kinds of things are going to be focused on heavily. However, I will say that what Matt accomplished with the pressure he was under, with how many hits he took, I think, I mean, round of applause to him for not being injured at some point this season. I mean, that, you want to talk about a tough quarterback. All right, Atlanta, you've got a tough quarterback, okay? There are a lot of things to be proud of as far as Matt Ryan goes. One of the things that stood out to me, top five in completion percentage, okay? And that's with getting hit more than any time in his career. That's without your top wide receiver in Julio Jones for most of the season. That's without a healthy Roddy White. For you can call it the whole season because I don't know that he was ever December anywhere near 100%.
Yeah, December was the only – When he started to become a factor.
Right. So he's injured in the third preseason game or second or third preseason game. And pretty much the start of the season is a wash for him. Steven Jackson, the guy that you were relying on so heavily, unfortunately gets a hamstring injury at the start of the year. He's out for 5 weeks. Okay. Under those conditions, for Matt Ryan to stick with the best quarterbacks in the entire league is astounding to me.
Absolutely.
And it's a huge reason to be proud, and it's a huge reason to be optimistic for 2014 because that's valuable experience that Matt has now.
Yeah. You know, you talk about, like we were just saying with the rookies and that experience, but there's learning lessons, I guess, in the first time you do anything, you know. And like you said, that's the first time Matt's at least been sacked that many times. He's faced pressure. Let's not, you know, paint a different picture, but – you know, this is the first time it seems like he's faced that degree of pressure. And he's a smart guy. I'm sure he's going to learn lessons from that and how to apply things moving forward.
I think you can look at some of the game film, and you can kind of point to a certain area in about midseason where he started to become more and more comfortable with the possibility of getting hit.
Yeah.
I think when you get hit as much as you do, and I've never played quarterback, so let me put that out there. I know it's shocking to all of you that I've never played quarterback, all right? But I would think as a quarterback, if I'm getting hit a lot, I'm going to start seeing ghosts.
Yeah.
You know? I'm going to start hearing footsteps. I'm going to start seeing ghosts. I'm going to get the happy feet. And I'm going to be trying to force things way faster than I should be. And to Matt's credit, we didn't see that. We didn't see a lot of him kind of being nervous. And I think as he kind of went through the season and kind of understood, okay, look, I got to make the best of this situation, he handled it extremely well, showed a lot of patience at times.
It shows some mobility that we haven't always seen as well. So, and, you know, moving around, stringing things out a little bit.
Yeah.
That's encouraging. Those are good things.
Absolutely. So, long and short of it is I'm extremely encouraged by his performance under the circumstances. And I think if there was ever a measuring stick to say, okay, given better protection, what can Matt Ryan accomplish? I think the arrow is way up there.
Absolutely.
On that particular person. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, another person that you know, makes me feel good about this upcoming season is defensive coordinator Mike Nolan.
Okay.
He's still in place, right? I'm under the I believe that you're either good at what you do or you're not. You know? And you know, more time in a a job can make you better, but you're either good or you're not. You know, and I don't think if you were once good, you don't just suddenly become bad. I believe your talents erode over time. But Coach Nolan, he's recognized around the league. You know, in the history of the league, he's recognized as a great defensive mind. He has been one. I don't think he's going to change overnight and not be one. You know, the 2013 season is what it is. A lot of things went wrong. You know, he lost some key components to what he wanted to accomplish. And while we're not making excuses with the injuries, you know, but let's just be honest, you know, being short-staffed can make things difficult in any line of work. I feel like with another season, you know, with so many of these rookies, and I think he got a lot more than he, you know, bargained for out of some of these guys. He's got some really nice chips, and all of Coach Nolan's stops, you know, he has built a defense that was better than when he left it. you know, in better standings and better, you know, defensive categories than when he got there. And I'm not saying Coach Nolan's going anywhere, but you know, I feel like the improvement of the defense is just going to continue to be there with a mind like that. And I'm happy that he's going to be in place with all these rookies, and you know, hopefully, you know, Falcons will add some more talent in the offseason, and he's just going to have more chips to play with.
Yeah, and I think one of the other interesting things that Arthur Blank said this week was that when the football operations department was given the task of looking at winning franchises and writing down and reporting back on what specific traits those winning franchises all have, okay, continuity was way up on the list. And when you're constantly changing things around, it sets you back. And I think in Mike Nolan's case, as you said, you know, we're not using injuries as an excuse, but there was a lot of rookie talent that he had to work with. And one of your guys, and I'm going to get to him here, one of my reasons for my last reason for being optimistic about 2014 is Croy Bierman.
Yeah.
And his return. And I think that him being out really, it's a pivot point on your defense.
Yeah.
Okay, because Croy is one of those guys who can do so many different things. He can rush the passer. He can stop the run. He can also drop back into coverage. And I think as an offensive lineman, you never know what this guy's going to do. And if you see him up on the line and you think he's going to be rushing you, all of a sudden he backs off and he goes into coverage. Well, somebody else is coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, and you got to find that person. And so I think that changes a lot of what offenses can do against the Falcons defense, and not having that cog in your defensive line and really in your linebacking core, because we saw him play much more linebacker during training camp and during the preseason, I think is a big thing to be missing. So for me, it's one of those reasons to be optimistic, but I think in terms of what you were saying, the continuity of having somebody who had a plan, plans went awry out of his control, and keeping him there so that you know your defensive guys can continue to learn. I think one of the things, if you look at Mike Nolan's career, he does a really good job of developing young talent. And if anything, again, we saw the arrow go upwards with these guys as went week to week.
Absolutely.
So for me, I completely agree with that. And to tie into that, I'll just say, I mean, Croy Bierman coming back in 2014, I think is going to be huge for this defense.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a fair comparison to Croy, but he's kind of the Julio Jones of the defense in terms of a lot of things happening because of something that Croy's doing. You know what I mean?
Like, but he's never going to be as sung as Julio is, because Julio's always got the spotlight on him. But I think you miss a lot of the stuff that Croy does, because a lot of what he accomplishes, he can make plays happen on one side of the field if he's on the other side of the field.
Absolutely.
That's the type of player that he is.
Absolutely.
So, for me, that's that's our list.
Yeah. One of, you know, just six items. But
that's right.
There's a lot more.
All right. So, I know everybody on Twitter has, like, really wanted to get us into talking about the draft.
Yeah, it's time.
And it's time.
It's...
I'm not ready. We aren't flipping this over to DraftCast just yet.
Just yet.
We got a little bit of time left to go, but I wanted to whet some appetites here with a very quick topic, and we may go lightning round here.
Okay.
I don't really know.
I hear you.
But we're going to get into a quick draft deliberation.
Doom.
I don't know what that
is. I just hear like this, was it CSI or whatever, the Law and Order.
Doom. Oh, yeah.
The gavel.
Yeah. We can maybe get that for the next show.
I just heard
draft
that
deliberation. So I think the big topic right now, or the big question, well, there are a couple of questions, but the one of the things that I think we're all kind of wondering is, will the Falcons deal the number 6 overall pick to either move up or move down in the draft?
Interesting.
And you have 30 seconds to make your case.
Okay.
Go.
Oh, I was not expecting this. I say no way, Jose.
Okay.
sitting at number six, you're still going to find a top quality, a top flight player at his position, whether it's defensive end, defensive tackle, offensive guard. And it's just a little crazy, but you know, at number six, but you're still in the mix to get a super high quality player. And I think the quarterbacks are going to play a role in who slides. And I think the Falcons are going to be sitting pretty. Falcons are going to be sitting pretty. They're in good shape.
Okay.
So I say no way.
Okay.
They're just going to sit there and
let it fall.
Let the good players come to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go in 3, 2, 1. All right. So I think that there's a possibility. I'm not going to be definitive here. You were pretty definitive. No way Jose is a definitive answer to that. I'm going to say that because of the history of Thomas Dimitroff and what he's willing to do in the draft, i.e. the Julio Jones trade a couple of years ago, I think there's the possibility that if they are targeting a certain player, okay, and they feel the need to move up, and we saw it last year too with Desmond Trufant, you moved up to get him, you go ahead and you make that move. I think it's something that could happen, and it's 30 seconds, but I think it's something that could happen. I say don't put it out.
Buzzers.
Don't put it outside the realm of possibility here. But
and he continues to go.
But I think that it's something that you can't say definitively right now, but geez, if you're a betting man.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas is – he's a dealer.
He likes to deal. A bit of a riverboat gambler.
Yes. And we
just
love
like
that
Mike
him.
Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was our draft appetizer.
Okay. Nice. I like
folks.
It. We have to do that for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Kind of wet the appetite.
Because we're not getting into DraftCast just yet.
There's so many things. So.
We got a couple more things that we got to do.
Yeah.
So, cool. Right. Well, that'll do it.
So you really think I'm, wow, move up in the draft?
Just saying it's possible.
The bombshell.
Just saying it's possible.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. All
right.
I don't know anything. I'm just looking at history and saying, okay, well, it's been done before.
Yeah.
Guess it could be done again.
Okay. Fair enough.
History can repeat itself.
Yes, it can.
And history will repeat itself next week.
Next week.
When we're back on the Falcon Cast podcast. How's that for a segue? Pretty good.
Nice job.
Thanks for joining us, Falcons fans.